Today we're talking murder, lesbian affairs, crack. Okay, none of those things, but we are talking episode 9 and 10 of The Crown. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
I just want more people to watch the show. Like, I feel like if more people watched the show, they would understand a lot more.
And they would understand why it's so awesome and that they have to.
And they would understand why this isn't actually My Country, 'Tis of Thee. Right. It's actually the British National Anthem, which we kind of stole for our song, which makes sense.
It does.
We did start out a colony of England. But you know what? We won the war. We won the war.
Hey.
And it's an interesting thing.
And hopefully The Crown will win some awards with the Golden Globe nominations that they've received. Congratulations to Claire Foy and John Lithgow.
John Lithgow's hands down going to win. Especially, we saw a lot of John Lithgow in episode 9, Assassins.
My favorite.
And then episode 10 was the coming out of Margaret's character and Elizabeth. So we have a lot to talk about today. Let's start off with episode 9, Assassins.
Yes.
Episode 9, we see that John Lithgow's character of Winston Churchill becomes a real person. And in many ways. So we see him become sick and have a stroke in 7 and 8.
Correct.
And then now we see the culmination of him. And we always ask, like, what happened to him? When does he die? He doesn't die.
No.
But he does retire.
Finally.
Well, he retires because he was pushed out. This is a man, and I've seen this happen with success and successful people. They never know when they have to leave. Like, they don't know when to gracefully bow out. And we see Winston Churchill not wanting to leave.
But like I said before, this job kept him alive. And as we see in episode 9, it's, you know, I didn't know he had 5 children to take care of in addition to his wife. So he needed the job. He needed the money, actually, probably.
It's not about the money. Actually, the pension would have taken care of that.
What it really comes down to is
he wanted it for his ego.
Definitely.
And we definitely see that in the Sutherland portrait that comes out of it, which is the gift that's being given to him on his birthday, as it is the anniversary of Parliament and all these things happening at once. And they're setting it up in Parliament for him to retire. And Eden, who we remember he got sick while he was on his trip to the United States.
Right, Anthony.
He's pushing for Winston Churchill to be resigned of his own accord.
But it was really selfish of him because he really just wanted the job for himself. But then when he got it, he could barely handle it.
Actually, when he got it, he was actually known as one of the most failed prime ministers because, as we see later in the episode, he has a run-in with then President General Gamal Abdel Nasser of Egypt.
Yes, we have to talk about that.
And that leads to the Suez Crisis.
And then was there like a drug issue? Winston mentioned something about some pills constantly shaking and everybody noticing it. Like
with Eden?
Yeah.
Like Eden was sick, so he was using drugs because of his health. And
right.
He resigned 2 years later after getting the post, just like Churchill predicted, because he couldn't do the job. He said it was for health reasons, but that's what it really felt like, is he couldn't do the job.
And I also learned that the reason that they were able to have such a close rapport was because Anthony Eden actually married Churchill's niece.
Yes, this is true.
I did not know that. It's all scandalous, all incestuous. Everybody's mixed up together.
Well, no, it's not incestuous. What it is it's cultivating power. So
definitely,
we see that in high society all the time.
Right.
It's not like Hiltons marry outside. They marry Carnegies,
right,
and so forth and so on. They really cultivate this power.
Well, now there's hope with Miss Meghan Markle and Prince Harry. So, you know, they may be stepping
sure,
out
and
of
that's
their,
a future step.
Now.
And it's the steps that were taken because of people like Margaret and because of Edward. And we see that. But
yes,
before that, this wasn't a common occurrence.
Of course.
We see a lot of, and at that time in the past, in the 1400s, 1600s,
right,
and so on. That's incestuous relationships.
Right, marrying the cousins.
Those happen. Marrying the cousin, marrying.
Exactly.
Sometimes even, you know, when you go far back up in royalty, you see brothers and sisters getting married.
Right.
Cleopatra was married to her own brother.
Hey, you
so,
know, you gotta
who
do what you
was also
do.
10 years her junior. So it's a just interesting situation when it comes to royals. All the rules are broken and are off. There are no rules that apply for us normal peasants,
right,
as we are.
But, you know, for us normal gals, you know, now there's hope for us. We can, you know, have a shot at getting, you know, a crown just like this, you know. So anyone, there's hope for us.
I mean, Grace
ladies.
Kelly married the Prince of Monaco, which was a big deal at the
exactly.
time. And then we also see people like Queen Rania marrying the King of Jordan.
Right.
These things do happen, but royalty tends to stay in royalty. And that's a big center issue in episode 10 when it comes to Margaret. In episode 9, the big issue is age. and coming to realization of who you really are and where you really stand.
Yeah.
And legacy.
But also, there was also the issue of Porchy's relationship with Elizabeth. You know, he was her friend for a long time. He helped her.
Well, that's a whole. Well, hold on. Let's deal with, you're jumping. Okay. Right now, let's deal with Winston Churchill, which is a central part of
the storyline. This was the first episode that I honestly teared up at, because to see.
When Winston teared up, did you tear up? When he was sitting in the chair and he was coming up with the pond.
No, I didn't tear up then, but it's just goodbyes always make me sad. So I hate to say goodbye, and to see, you know, Elizabeth have to say goodbye to Churchill, even though it was on his own terms, it was still sad.
Not on his own terms.
No, he was ready. He said, I am ready to let you go. He said it.
But he didn't mean it. How do I know? Because he burned the portrait at the end. He was not ready to let go. He resented it. He resented what was happening.
No,
and if you're reading outside of the show, that's different. But on the show, he was not ready to go.
No, he was joking during the ceremony. But of course, in actuality, he told her, he said that I'm ready. I can leave you now. So in terms of the show.
What's he supposed to say? What's he supposed to look at the queen and be like, bitch, you making me leave? Like,
no,
what is he supposed to say?
He was already 80.
Sure.
You know, he had already stayed around so long. His wife was ready for him to go. And at this point, he said, okay, I can do this. It's time. I'm going to leave on my own terms.
When it comes to, we see a lot of this when it comes to power, even as amongst CEOs who are, it's out with the old, in with the new. They're not ready to let go. The old is not ready
to let
go.
But I feel like he realized that he had already held on so long, and he said, okay, this is my time. I think he came to terms with it. That's why when he gave her that forehead kiss goodbye, it was just kind of like a father saying goodbye to his daughter.
So why did he burn the painting? He really just didn't like it that much. He looked at the painting and was like, this is such an ugly painting.
I think he felt like it was a betrayal. He thought that his country was going to represent him in a good way. They were going to make him look good in this painting. He was going to look youthful. He was going to look strong. And here he comes out looking old and weak.
It is known as one of the biggest losses of English art of history.
But he did not want to be remembered like that.
So. Sure, he might not have wanted to be remembered like that, but he also wasn't ready to let go. And I think he resented Sutherland and the painting because it was a physical manifestation of him being forced out. And I saw a lot of resemblance, and I saw a lot of cross between the painting mm-hmm. of him looking at the painting and the painting of Dorian Gray. He was looking at the ugliness that he had become and not liking it and wanting to surpass it. He was not ready. No one is ready to let go. The painting made him realize,
okay, I am not the youthful, strong person that I once was.
Sure.
The painting was like a mirror for him. And therefore he realized, okay, my time is up. It's time for me to let someone else do this. I'm exhausted. He told his wife, he said, I am tired.
I think Sutherland's speech made him feel that way. And then he resented it. He resented feeling weak. He resented feeling vulnerable in front of Sutherland. He resented the tears that were in his eyes when he was speaking about the pond.
No.
He resented all these things.
I think, you know, here it was. He was meeting someone who he thought was going to be like a peer, a fellow painter. Did we even know that Winston painted at the time prior to this? We had never seen that. So here he was thinking someone's going to paint him in a flattering way. And when that didn't happen, it was just a shock to his system and a shock to his ego. And therefore he was like, okay, let me reevaluate the situation.
And I see another side where I think this is and I know a lot of celebrities who are like this, who even in their old age, they just think that their shot's going to come, or that, you know, they're better than all the young whippersnappers out there doing it. And they're not ready to let go. I see it all the time.
I'm not saying that it was easy for him to let go, but he came to a realization that we hadn't seen him come to in previous episodes.
I think
he was forced into
that realization because of circumstance, but he never actualized it.
So
and
you
I
think
feel
they...
that's why... They showed the portrait being burned.
But do you think that it was
in
a
the
sabotage?
Manner that it was.
Like Parliament wanted the painting to look bad to make him realize, hey, he's old?
No, I think that the Parliament chose a modernist painter on purpose.
Okay.
They used someone who was modern, knowing the style that he paints.
Right.
This is a man, even the concept of his other paintings, how the shadows and the darkness, and he had to explain that to Winston Churchill. He was explaining like, oh, well, this is a bad time of mine.
Right.
But that's a concept of modernism, right? So they didn't get someone who painted in a classical style.
Right.
And that's what they knew would happen. The Parliament wanted Winston Churchill gone, and they got their wish. They wanted him to come to this realization, and they wanted him to break. They were all waiting on pins and needles at every word he said, And when he didn't resign at the actual speech ceremony,
yeah,
it was a shock to them.
But he went out on his own terms. He went out, you know, still making pleasing the crowd. He was making them laugh. And he even was able to make a joke when he saw the painting itself. He didn't. He never let them see him sweat, which I loved about
piece
him.
Of modern, patriarchal modern art,
right.
Which was his way of saying it's a piece of shit.
Right. But what I loved is that we finally got to see him as a human being. Like, I didn't know about the death of his daughter until this time. And that conversation that he had with Sutherland was really sad to see such a strong man, like, break down in that way. That was amazing.
And a lot of times, growing old is sad. Growing old is sad because you've become, in your own mind or in other people's minds, which is even worse, a shell of your former self.
Right.
So you're not able to physically or mentally or emotionally do all the things that you used to do in your youth, but you want to. You want to because it's not like your mind has changed. It's not like your perception in that way and spirit has changed. It's just become broken. And that's what I saw in Winston Churchill this episode that I had never seen in the previous episodes.
Now,
we knew he was getting old and frail.
But
he had two strokes.
What did you think about the dinner when Elizabeth made her speech at the end? And this was after her big fight with her husband. And here it is. She's able to say all these kind words about Winston, about how much of a support he was. And the fact that even though he was leaving his post, that she was still going to be relying on him. And did you think that was kind of her taking a jab at her husband since they had just gotten in that fight?
I think that was her being a queen and doing her due diligence, as in she's A, supporting someone who everyone knows is a respectful, powerful person in this country. B, she said the right thing.
Right.
She said, I will still rely on you. She's not going to rely on him. You know,
a little bit. I mean, he's like the only strong male figure, that one of few that she now has after the passing of her father. She still has her uncle. You know, Tommy Lassells is way in the back. She has her new secretary. But, you know, she confides in him and trusts Winston more than she does anybody else.
Sure, she should. She should confide in him. But I didn't see Winston pop up once in the 10th episode. So how much did she confide in him?
Well, that's because she was dealing with her sister and all that drama again.
Exactly. She was dealing with her sister. And if she was going to get advice from someone, it should have been Winston Churchill.
Well,
but we saw a lot of Eden and didn't see a lot of Churchill.
Well, she went to the expert. She went to her uncle, who had gone through something similar, where, you know, he had to choose between his family and love. And he chose love over that. And here it was. Her sister was putting them in the same situation again. And they had to decide.
And
okay,
she didn't call Winston Churchill and just even ask his opinion.
You know,
we didn't see a Churchill.
Episode 9 was already so Churchill heavy, we didn't need it.
Oh, so it was a production. No, how about
story wise, we had enough.
This is historically accurate, right?
But
so I feel like she didn't rely on Churchill. It was a speech, it was a thing. It was like, great job, we love you, I'm gonna still need you forever. And, you know, that's what happens. You're forgotten.
It would have been a bit of overkill to see Winston in the final episode, because that episode 9 was Winston's episode. He got to shine in that episode. We got the closure that we wanted from both of them.
Did
so,
you see Margaret in, did you see Margaret in episode 9?
I don't remember.
She made a cameo, even though it wasn't about her. We saw her in episode 10. If the queen was really going to listen to Churchill's advice, this would be the time. No one knows more about constitutionality tradition than Winston Churchill.
She let him paint. She said, okay, Winston's retired now. I don't need to bother him. Let me let him paint. So that's what she did.
No,
I think she just didn't
need his advice, because that's what happens. And it's unfortunate that we do this to the people who have sometimes the best advice, which is our elders, and we just don't listen to them. We place them away a lot of times in homes and just forget them. And this is what happened to Winston Churchill. And that's why in episode 9, he was so resentful and burned the painting. If he didn't burn the painting in that manner, maybe if he had hid it away or like put it, but he burned it. He put bushes on it right by the pond and set it on fire.
Which I loved. Visually, it was stunning. And that's what I love about this show. Like, the creators and the cinematographers did an amazing job with the visuals, and that's what also kept me interested each and every episode.
It does, of course. Cinematically, it looks amazing, and I'm sure there's some type of notion or award and notice of that.
Hopefully.
So you brought up the concept of Porchy, which is the horse breeder.
Yes.
And Elizabeth, of course, we know she loves horses. She brings it up. It's one of the things she's the most knowledgeable about. It's clearly a passion of hers, a hobby that she sustains throughout her life. And she, as a queen, she even owns horses and stables, and of course is more interested in the money. And even though it's little money, I mean, £40,000 is nothing to a queen,
right?
But she's so interested in how much this horse can make and run and do. So we see that there's a slight possible love affair that goes on between the queen and Porchy.
They have affection for each other. I don't think they
we
ever
know
took
Porchy's
it.
In love with the queen.
Totally, but I don't think they ever took it any further than that because, like she said, Philip was the only man that she's ever loved.
And I believed her when she said that. However, she did not notice Porchy. She had some type of affection just a regular friend.
It was only
Porchy.
Because her husband wasn't giving her attention and here Porchy was. So he was just filling a need, filling a void that she had. Her husband ended up getting jealous, which I found ironic because I'm like, you out here in these streets doing everything with who knows who.
Allegedly. We haven't seen that show. Okay,
we don't know.
We've seen what are the remnants. And of course, Margaret brings it up when they're talking. It's like, well, you know, your husband, yes. I've heard the rumors. And
exactly.
She like kind of throws shade on Elizabeth. So
which
we
must
see
have hurt
that, which is interesting. Interesting concept. But the queen knows what's up. She knows where she's about and Philip is about. Philip has been Philip the whole time.
And
he
she has
changed.
To give him a little bit of leeway because, you know, he's given up so much for her. So I wonder if she just said, okay, I'm going to just turn a blind eye. I'm going to let him do what he wants to do. As long as I don't hear about it, I'm fine. But then Porchy here, he was, you know, he had the same interest as her. We didn't hear Philip's show any
Philip had
in
no the, interest in horses. In he fact, she mocked he mocked
until
the
they were
process.
Having sex. That's
he
when
actually
he had
didn't.
Interest.
He didn't have interest. He was mocking it. He was making fun of it. What's it called when horses have sex and
saying how
and
this was how we were when we were courting.
Exactly.
And
he just liked to be
crass,
crude. Yes. like actually Elizabeth's father, who actually could be crude at sometimes. Remember the
it's
limericks.
Still in a charming way. I feel like with Philip, limericks. It's always in a mean way.
That's because Philip is a little mean and he's a little bratty. And we also see a lot more of that in episode 10.
Yes.
But in episode 9, we see them get into a fight and they're in the fight in the Land Rover as they're driving away. And Philip actually just gets out the car, which was not very king-like.
But I like that because
I do not like Philip.
The fact that he left, it showed that she said something that really hurt him and he couldn't even handle it.
I think he was just being a brat and he was trying
very
to get attention
so.
And we see that once again in episode 10 when people allude to the fact that Philip likes attention, that he's being a brat for attention.
And this is why he, you know, it was suggested that he get sent away to Australia, and he was, you know, hesitant to do it, but eventually he came around, which I found interesting.
And I once again, he came around when he found out there was attention involved. He is a brat. I do not like Philip's character, and I think that is a testament to how good the actor portraying him is. Because he's so unlikable that it's like, you can't be like this in real life.
Right.
Right? I just do not like Philip because it's like, yo, shut up already. Like, shut up. Stop your pouting. Stop your whining. You are the king of a country, whether you like it or not. And yes, you are the queen's consort because you are not the direct lineage of king.
Right.
But hey, this comes with a lot of advantages, buddy. And you're crying about, oh, you wanted to be the big man. Well, that's not how destiny had it planned.
And he still gets to go out whenever he wants to. And he, you know, gets to reap the rewards of the difficult job that she has, but yet he's still complaining in every episode.
All the time. He complains every single scene he's in.
Yeah, and that's another thing with Porchy. He was more of a support system for her. Like, here it is. She gave him his own line because
a direct line to the queen.
Yeah, because he was there for her late at night when he was trying to get it on with his girlfriend. Here she is disturbing him, trying to talk about horses, which I also showed, like, she didn't have anything else to do at the time. Like, once she had some downtime...
Well, Philip was always out.
Right,
Philip was gone.
No,
we see her
to.
Sleeping, and Philip is gone, and at least assumingly philandering as he goes out and coming back late and having friends and being drunk and partying every night while Elizabeth is worried about the kingdom and sleeping early. And so we see that there's this dynamic between Philip's jealousy for Porchy and Porchy's fiance's jealousy for the queen.
Right.
She's very aware of the queen. She's aware of Porchy's feelings for the queen.
Right.
And we begin the episode with her directly asking Porchy about this when Porchy is proposing to her.
And I didn't even believe Porchy. You could tell that he still loved Elizabeth.
Of course
but,
he does.
I mean,
throughout
what was he going to do?
Scene.
You know how it is when you fall in love with someone and then they get married, then you just got to move on.
I don't love these hoes. So listen, this is what's gonna happen with Porchy and the girlfriend. Porchy and the girlfriend.
Fiance.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Fiance. Mm-hmm. They're going to get married, but Porchy's always going to think about the queen. The queen is his love.
And she'll always think about him. Hello, that's why he has the direct line. Because no matter what, she wants him to have access to her. And that says a lot about her relationship with her husband.
And we also see their connection when Porchy's bringing different horses to stud and for their horse, the queen's horse, to stud. And we see the three horses, and they select the same horse together, and it's almost like a romantic moment between the two.
Yeah, he's like her horse soulmate. We should be together. Yeah, he's her horse soulmate, and she even says, like, what... There's the question, if had she married Porchy, what would her life have been like? Here, she would have had a faithful husband, someone she wouldn't have had to worry about. He would have been coming home at night.
But yet
she chose the man that was a bit more difficult, again, rough around the edges. But I think it speaks to the fact that she doesn't want things easy all the time. So she likes a bit of a challenge, and that's what she found in
her
husband.
And she also wasn't ready or aware that she would become queen such early in life.
Right.
So a lot of these things come to play. And I actually wonder if Queen Elizabeth's favorite show was Mr. Ed. She loves horses. And that's just a thing.
Like, do you think Queen Elizabeth watches The Crown?
You know what? While I was watching this episode, mm-hmm. I actually thought about that entirely, both episodes 9 and 10. Yeah. If she watches The Crown or the family watches The Crown, right. and likes or hates it or how exactly. they feel about it, I would assume that there's clearly someone in Buckingham Palace that watches The Crown.
Right. The I don't servants know if or something,
The Crown.
Right?
Yeah, of course. But I don't know if, and they're probably not allowed to talk about it in the That's council true. Or something.
Right.
I don't know if the Queen watches it, but it wouldn't surprise me if she did. The Elizabeth that I saw in episode 10 would not surprise me. This is now, she's coming to her own.
Right.
And going into episode 10. So episode 9 ends basically with the Queen and Philip having this conflict over the alleged infidelity of Queen Elizabeth with Porchy.
Mm-hmm.
And Porchy, Queen says that Porchy has a direct line because he's like family. He's like, you know, furniture. He's like one of the, you know, sofas. And he's right. like, as long as you don't sit on him.
Why does
and
he have to be so nasty all the time?
Because he's a brat. So rude. They have a, and in the end scene, before the dinner, Queen Elizabeth and Philip have a conversation where Elizabeth, like, this is like a very girl moment. It's like, they're not even talking about it.
Oh, here you go again with these girl moments.
She just brings it up. I was like, by the way, when we were talking earlier, just to let you know, I've loved you and you're the only man I've ever loved and you can't say the same thing about me. So if you can't say the same thing about me, why don't you shut the F up and let's...
And Philip's like, why are you bringing up some old stuff? And he just leaves. Now that hurts.
Because he's a brat.
When you tell someone you love them and they can't tell you back, that hurts to the core.
He is... And it's just, it's interesting because, you know, they are showing Philip in a bad light. So we move on. So love, right? Unrequited love is one of the themes throughout because mm-hmm. the Queen's first love should be the country. And she has choices that she has to make that are hard, but she should put the country above herself
right.
and her family and even the ones she loves. Once again, we haven't seen much of the children. We go into episode 10, Gloriana, which is named for an English opera about an Elizabeth, actually a Queen Elizabeth. And mm-hmm. it's about the clash and internal turmoil. And now we see that Margaret comes into play because the Margaret has waited her 2 years.
Right.
She's turned 25.
She's grown
and
now
she's supposed to be allowed to marry whoever she wants to.
And she was ready. Now, were you surprised that Margaret stayed faithful? Because I was. I was like, okay, I thought she would have, you know, dibbled and dabbled a little bit.
Margaret
just
stayed
explored
faithful
her options.
To Peter Townsend, who we saw be basically exiled and now he can finally come back home.
Now he comes home, and that party scene, it really showed the difference in their personalities. Here it was, men wanted to dance with Margaret, she's the life of the party. Peter's staying
in
the background.
He just goes to bed
yeah, like an old man. I was like, this is
well, he is an old man. He's 16 years older than her.
But then I realized, you know, she was missing a father figure. You know, she was a little bit younger than Elizabeth when her father died, so she missed
daddy
having
issues.
Yeah, so
that
I think
probably
that's
means
where
that Margaret was amazing in bed.
I don't know about
let's be
that.
Real let's we all know what that means. So
that's the I don't
thing.
Know
I'm
about
sure she was
there.
Because they get it on in the bed and they get it on
but
when Peter comes
really,
home and it was very passionate.
Were they really having rude. Going all the way, or was she saving herself?
I think that going all the way wasn't the way they were kissing when he came home. That was
know,
all
that
the way
was,
kiss.
That, was a
that wasn't a
kiss.
Let's just dry hump kiss. That was the just the tip.
I
all
mean,
the whole
hello,
thing.
Hello, it had
royal
been
2 staff
years.
Kiss.
Right.
So
2 years. I mean, you are going to be passionate with your kissing.
We see that Peter is home, and that the public, especially, you know, newspapers at the time, took polls, and
right.
the public is overwhelmingly in favor of Margaret and Peter's joining in marriage. The problem is the Royal Marriage Act of 1772 is not in favor of it, and
I
neither
know.
Is the church, and
surprise,
neither is the parliament.
Surprise.
And you know, even though the Queen is, I wouldn't say in favor, is relenting to Margaret's will,
right.
she is distraught at the fact that she would probably not be allowed to honestly back her sister's bequest, and that was something that bothered her.
Well, she wanted to keep the promise that she made to her
father. As a kid, we saw that as they started out. Right. They were two little kids, and the father was like, you guys, above all else, the crown, and above each other's back, right. And never. And they were like, never, father, never.
But, you know, there was a moment I thought Elizabeth was going to be able to keep her promise, and I appreciated the fact that she really tried. She really wanted to. She went to bat for her sister.
She tried.
Especially when she took... the new prime minister to see where
Eden,
where Margaret and Peter used to meet, and where they used to stack the rocks each time they used to place a rock each time they met. I didn't realize there would be so many rocks. It showed you
that just
how
means
many
that Margaret
times...
was getting it on so
no,
many times. Freaky deaky
Margaret, their love was
okay.
deep.
You've never, yeah,
and,
so
and,
it was something else.
And wholesome
else.
And pure. So they put the rocks down,
it's
not
nice
their
to think that.
Underwear down. That's sure. not what was going on.
Maybe not. But we do know that as pure as the love as it was, we do know that it's against royal decree because Peter had been divorced and his ex-wife was still alive.
Right.
And that's why actually it goes back to something I remember is why King Henry was beheading women all the time mm-hmm. is because they had to die in order for him to move on and marry someone else.
Right.
So he was bringing up Anne Boleyn's on trumped up charges in order to move on.
Right.
Because he couldn't be with someone new if the old person he was with was still around and alive.
Right.
So we see this become an issue. The church, the four horsemen as they are,
they were
represented.
Scary.
The four heads of churches come in.
You're always talking about the Illuminati, and that was the sign of the Illuminati right there.
I don't speak about the Illuminati. The Illuminati doesn't exist.
Right.
So anyway, what I was saying is the four church horsemen came in, and as they come in, they have a conversation, and they're like, we can't be about this.
Right.
And Eden warns the queen, several heads, including Lord Salisbury, who's always an important position. Lord Salisbury is like, I will resign if...
But they were such hypocrites, because even Eden himself was a divorcee. You know what I'm
but
saying?
But they aren't royal.
But it just...
I'm sorry. It's a different decree.
But they were saying that times were changing.
Sure.
And they understood that.
They
but
understood.
Then it was more
so did the country.
The church, and being that she was the head of the church.
It's the church, you know, and the parliament. And this
so
is the position.
It made it
heavy.
Difficult.
Is
but I
the
think
head
they could,
that
they
wears the crown.
They would have. I felt like they could have done it. They just didn't want to.
I don't think they wanted to, and I don't think they should have done it. See, this is how things work. And I remember Tommy bringing this up. LaSalle's bringing this up.
Is it like your crack before. In the glass theory?
The crack in the glass. That okay. is how you get crown. This is just how this works. Tradition supersedes custom.
Right.
This is a tradition. It is tradition that these are the rules. These are things that are older in many ways than the
right.
growth of this country.
Right.
This country is based on tradition, and which is what, in actuality, makes England and the UK, United Kingdom, such a powerful force, is because they did everything steeped in tradition.
So you think if Elizabeth had let Margaret get married, then everybody else, all the other divorced people, would have been getting married as well, and then the whole country would have just run
amok? No, I think
that
it's not about the divorced people. I think that they need something to believe in, and the title of the show is The Crown,
right?
Because they believe in the crown,
right?
You know how in America it's like In God We Trust on the money.
Uh-huh.
And most people don't, but they pray for more money
lately. We've
right?
got some issues, right?
But in England, it's the Queen's picture that's on everything.
So
in Canada, it's the Queen's picture. In Jamaica, it's the Queen's picture.
Right.
In Australia, it's the Queen's picture.
Yeah.
They trust the crown. The crown is the head.
To be like this perfect and law-abiding
exactly.
body. And if they started breaking the rules, then it's like, okay, what
constitutionality,
it would have like made
exactly.
people waver in their faith, you think?
And it's little by little. You can't jump ahead too much.
Okay.
Because once you do that, that's when that crack becomes even bigger and more
right.
apparent to everyone.
Right, okay.
So my thing is, watching it happen, I understood.
Well, it was interesting that when she was trying to make this decision, Elizabeth decided to call her uncle. And he was like, okay, I was waiting for you to call me. And he even advised her, listen, don't do it. You know, here I am. I chose the woman that I wanted to love. And I gave everything up. But don't let
don't
this
do it. I am half king. I am a king without a kingdom. That's
that
the biggest tragedy.
Deep.
And he meant that. And that's when Elizabeth made the decision, hey, I can't back
right.
this play. It will ruin... It will ruin the sanctity
and
of the
foundation
crown.
That we've
of
laid.
Of course.
Yeah.
And that's This is just how it works.
For Margaret, though,
you can feel sorry for these people. This is when I'm talking about first world problems.
Right.
Feel sorry for Margaret because Margaret and Peter Townsend never met Mary.
I know.
Margaret marries the photographer.
She bounces back in a big way.
Gets divorced in 9 years,
and she has a great life afterwards. She was okay. She was doing all right. Now
she got divorced, but Peter married some Belgian girl who was half his age. And
but do you think they still loved each other? I do.
I mean, maybe they loved each other.
Maybe they had secret rendezvous. We don't know.
I don't know. There are papers that say that there was a compromise that was going to be in effect and that were uncovered in 2004 and things of this nature where she would have been able to keep her title and civil servants, but had to, and even stay in the country, but couldn't have any of her heirs become all her lineage would have basically not been able to be fit for the crown.
But can you imagine, here it is, you're telling Peter, I love you, I will do anything to be with you, and then your sister's like, okay, you can have him, but you're gonna have to give all of this up, and she's like, Peter, you know, you cool and everything,
but she's 25, and I understand that, like, who wants to give all that up?
I understand.
Buckingham Palace looks popping. Like,
amazing.
Yeah, and she doesn't want to leave her country. And she saw the pain in her uncle's eyes. So she knew what an abdication meant. She didn't want to go through all that.
She didn't want to do it because she didn't want to leave her sister. Again, this was, again, keeping to their father's request that they stay.
I don't think that played. Actually, I think in that conversation they had, I saw resentment from Margaret.
Definitely.
And I don't know if till this day they dislike each other, but I could see this being a rift that can never be solved.
No, I feel like because Margaret bounced back and she ended up having a great life and she ended up becoming, a super popular person at the time. She was like the it girl of the time. I feel like she, like how I wanted before, finally started playing by the rules and stopped being so selfish and started doing things to assist her sister instead of like make things more difficult.
That's so funny you said that, because actually if you go to Queen Margaret's Twitter right now, at Queen Margaret, she said, F Elizabeth, she's a stupid bitch. She tweeted that and it got 11,215 retweets. She said, could have been with Peter.
He's the love of my life.
But she was a hater.
Meet me by the rocks, Peter.
See you later, alligator. That was actually a tweet she sent. So
wow.
And Donald Trump retweeted it too. Dang. So,
he's
official.
He's really on top of things.
So I don't know how their relationship is. It's just interesting because I don't know if my siblings would forgive me if I was in a position to do something like that, where I basically forbade you from being with the person that you love.
But then not just forbade you, but like made you wait 2 years and said, after 2 years, this is going to happen. I'm going to make this happen.
Well, made him wait a year after, and then it was 2 years until she turned 25.
But then you say, okay, do this for me, and then I'll do this for you. Here it is. You follow the rules for once, because we know Margaret barely followed the rules. Mm-hmm. And then she still doesn't get what she wants. So that was harsh.
And she set it up. Like, Queen Elizabeth set it up. Like, Margaret thought she was going to, oh, can't wait for this good news. Right. While they're sitting down. And then Queen Elizabeth, I can't do it.
Wait, can we talk about my boy Tommy Lassells again? Pulling the strings from behind the scenes. He's supposed to be retired. He's supposed to be gone. But yet he and Queen Mother still meet occasionally making decisions. And
that's
here it is.
A real relation. That's what you try to allude to Elizabeth and Churchill being. That's the real one. They stay together. They play together. Maybe have a love affair, but whatever it is, it's a mutual respect for one another.
Definitely.
And they both pull the strings from behind the scenes.
Yeah.
They are. So,
but Philip knows what's going on, and he brings it when he was dancing with Queen Mother. Sure. He was like, okay, so was it you? And I like the fact that Philip is, even though he's complaining, he might be complaining because he knows everything that people are trying to do behind his back. And he's like, listen.
Or maybe he's complaining because he's a brat. And
too. But he's like, okay, you're not going to pull the wool over my eyes. I see what you're doing. You're trying to kick me out of here. And that's
go
when
to Australia and change. He does need to change. Change your freaking attitude,
but
Philip.
What I love is when he says, what about the kids? Like, how can they be without their father?
Oh, okay,
so
well, we also see him being very rough with his kids, which we see and it's pointed out. And it's like he's actually like kind of berating his son every single time
we see him. But, you know, Charles was a bit sensitive.
Well, he's sensitive because his dad's always like, do this and shaking him like,
but look,
do
I mean,
it like
he
this.
Was trying to help teach him how to fish. If you don't, teach a kid in a stern way, how are they going to learn? Sometimes you got to, shake him up a little bit.
Yeah, but the shaking ended up being something that obviously is an issue for Charles later in life, where he resents it to a point where it's brought up.
But don't get me started on Charles, because, you know, I love me some Diana, and he just messed that whole thing up for Camilla, and, you know, that was just a scandal and a mess.
Well, see how that, and see that theme of how love is actually ruining tradition is something that goes through and through the royal family.
It's a reoccurring theme in their
life. It is a reoccurring theme.
But I think it's because they have to deny themselves in so many other areas. So when they're forced to do something, eventually they break the mold and say, no, I'm going to do this. You've forced me. I did it this way. I did it your way once. Now I'm going to do it my way.
It's just, it's an interesting dynamic between the two. And I don't understand why love is such a detrimental thing when it comes to royalty, but it is. And it's interesting because as I pursue my passions, I also often feel that the people that like want to be with me are sabotaging me.
What?
Like I feel that. Wait, even so though it's not, it's like, hey, I want to hang out. Hey, let's hang out. And I'm like, I have stuff to do. Like, I can't.
So love is holding you back.
And I feel that way.
You don't feel like it's like a support system that's helping.
I don't,
like,
often.
As you move towards your goal.
I do not often feel that way.
So when do you think love is going to make its way into your life?
I don't know, but it's not as I'm growing into the role that I am trying to fulfill, a destiny I'm trying to pursue.
Have you met a woman that's kind of like, that you've cared for, and she was like, no, I'm busy right now, I'm trying to pursue my goals?
No, I haven't. And
because they
I would
are
love
out
for
there.
That.
We are out there. We have things we want to do as well. We don't.
I would
always
love that. Hey,
first.
I would love for you not to text me. Like, you're just busy.
So you just got girls sweating
like you're
you all the
doing
time.
Stuff. I'm not. It's not about that. It's yes, but no, but it's not about that. It's about the fact that ambition, or in this case, tradition, supersedes a lot of these things.
Right.
They are priorities, and people need to understand priorities. This is a different level. This
totally.
Is a different level, and we see that because what's on the line is so big.
Yeah, it's they're not playing checkers. They're playing chess.
Exactly.
Here.
And we see a dynamic, for example, we need to get into when Eden goes to visit Abdul Nasser and they play
a game of chess. Okay, please let
Eden
me know.
Eden trying
what
to
happened.
Be nice.
Okay, yes.
And Abdul
Explain
Nasser was known as he's an aggressive man, he's a
right.
general. And every little thing that Eden was doing was taken the wrong way by Abdul Nasser.
Like he attempted to speak Arabic.
And he was like, why is his Arabic so good?
And then he was like, okay, come to dinner with me. And he's
like, why didn't I know about the formal dress? Which
exactly.
he kind of should have known.
That's
but
what
he
I,
came
but
in I, with the army. Like he came in like Wu-Tang deep.
He was ready for war.
Yeah. And everything he said. And then when Eden tried to use his English charm, it went flat on Abdul Nasser, which is actually something that I see now clashing between the West and the Eastern world.
But shouldn't Eden have known these like customs, being that he was like the foreign secretary prior? Like,
sure,
shouldn't
he should
already
have
had a rapport?
Possibly or not. I don't know. I also think it's not.
He was too busy Nasser worrying about being prime minister instead of focusing in on his own job.
Possibly. And Nasser was a very difficult person. I mean, this is a dictator of sorts.
Right.
So, I mean, I understand that, but that's one of the issues is like we see all these interpersonal relationships failing.
Now, what was that scene where Eden like was watching the footage and then he's like slumps down on the table, he shoots something in his arm? I was like, was he a heroin addict?
Possibly.
Like, what's going
or
on?
Or could have been injecting penicillin, he could have been injecting insulin. I mean, he had real health issues.
Right. And here it is. He just becomes prime minister, can barely handle it. Meanwhile, Winston stayed till he was 80 years old. Yeah, he had a bit of a drinking issue, but he had his painting as his outlet. He stood, two terms? And yet Eden can barely handle one.
I mean, he stood way more than just two terms.
Right.
Like he'd been, so we see the love relationship between Winston Churchill and his wife, where his wife is extremely supportive,
Clemmy.
And you see real love there.
I loved,
but it was respect.
Her. Definitely,
it was more respect. We don't see that same respect when it comes to Peter and Margaret. We don't see that same respect when it comes to Philip and Elizabeth. We don't see that same respect when it even came. The only other time we saw respect of that nature is when it comes between Queen Mother and
Tommy Lassell.
No, and. What's Elizabeth's dad's name? George.
Oh, King George. Yeah.
King George. Mm-hmm. So we see a respect there between the two.
But here it is. You have an example of a woman who's standing by her man and her love is helping push him forward. Clemmy's love for Churchill allowed him to go out and do the work that he wanted to do. She stayed home, raised the five kids. You know, here it is. She had a child die, and yet he still continued to pursue his career. And you have to have someone who has your back in order to do that.
But it's very few and far between where you find a woman who has the strength of character to do that and to find greatness within her spouse's abilities.
Right.
A lot of women don't want to do that. See, that's the thing.
No, you can't make that generalization. Sure, I think women understand. Sure, guys don't think we do. And you guys are always like, oh, she's sweating me. But listen, we are naturally, we want to love you. We want to care. That's how we were built. But when you mess us up, we'll say deuces to you.
So obviously you don't know these young women out there in the world today. Yeah. The ones who don't cook, that don't clean, that don't work, and just want to rely on their looks. And that happens a lot. Look,
so what is the guy bringing to the table?
Well, it depends. I'm not saying that I'm saying these guys ain't shit either. I'm just saying, in general, it's a real thing.
Look, yes, there are issues, but I think when a woman meets the right man and they have common goals in mind, like Michelle and Barack, they'll say, okay, you do this while I do this. But I think a lot of guys automatically get into relationships thinking the girl is going to be pressuring them. She's going to hold them back. And yes, maybe there are relationships like that, but there are men who hold women back as well. There are a lot of situations.
Of course, a lot of times. You know, but I'm seeing this from a male perspective, not only am I male, but it's a constant theme that keeps coming up, is that love is holding the dominant person back.
Are you talking about the show or your personal life?
Sure, I'm talking about the show, is that love is holding the dominant person back. Love is the conflict that Elizabeth has. No other conflict actually exists in her entire life. The only other conflict that exists is her conflict with becoming queen, which she very well goes into and grows within.
Right.
So now we see the conflict of her and her husband. We see the conflict with Edward and his wife.
Right.
We see that conflict of her wanting more and him having to give everything up to be with the wife.
He chose to.
Sure he did.
He chose to. Sure he did. He did that on his own accord. He knew what he was doing.
Sure.
He did it for love, maybe a little
and yet
sex.
He sounds like he has regret when it came down to the phone call.
I mean, he's also a little bit
broke. He didn't say,
broke.
Margaret, go for it. He said, Margaret, don't do it.
Yeah, because he's like, that you'll give up so much. I think Edward missed the lavish lifestyle. He, you know, you don't miss what you have until it's gone. So he didn't realize and appreciate everything that he had until he didn't have access to it anymore. But he had the woman he wanted. And so, you know, that was the game he chose to play.
So we see that happening. I mean, we see that happening throughout this. And it's just a constant theme. And I feel like it's always a constant theme when it comes to themes of power. I mean, I remember in The Godfather, it's like, Kate, yo, shut up, Kate. You know what I'm saying? Just Kate, chill. Do you like that house? Oh, you know how I got it? I'm the Godfather, bitch. Like, I've seen this. I'm watching this.
But then
same way with Philip. Like, Philip is a bitch. He needs to shut up.
Definitely, because he gained so much in marrying her. And that's what I was going to ask you. Like, do you think Philip was a bit of a gold digger? Like, he didn't really love Elizabeth. He couldn't even tell her when she asked him. But do you think that's because ultimately he was like, okay, marrying her is going to get me here. It's going to, you know, allow this, my life to...
I think that played a bigger part in his decision to be with Elizabeth.
Right.
Than we maybe speak about or even let on or even realize. I think that it was a part of that. She was perfect on paper. And it's always, I mean, it would be so nice to be... the enamoration of a queen, like that would be a beautiful thing.
And I also
who
think
doesn't
it was
want
a,
that
it was a situation where the woman loved, like, he knew Elizabeth loved him.
Sure.
He knew she would never cheat on him.
Sure.
She wasn't the fun one like Margaret was.
Sure.
So he knew he could go out and do whatever he wanted and she wasn't going to say anything to him. Whereas, did you see that conversation between Philip and Margaret? They had a really playful brother-sister kind of relationship,
yes,
which I found interesting because I don't remember seeing them in many
scenes together.
Well,
Philip has known Margaret since she was a kid.
Right.
Like, it's not new. Philip and Elizabeth had a true courtship, but Philip has also been around the court for basically the entirety of Margaret's life.
And that's also probably why he was so, he didn't really want her with Peter because he's like, girl, you can do better. You know, don't pick up this. Like, you have so much to offer. There's more for you out there.
And he meant that.
And
because he also saw his promise. And
right.
He saw that's that gold digger aspect you were discussing.
And as a
he
big,
knew his value
right.
and the value of her. And her vagina is valuable. Her vagina is a very valuable vagina.
Right. And as a big brother, he was trying to look out for her and
of
let
course.
Her know. Listen, you know, this is not a good look. And he was trying to tell Elizabeth. He was one of the people who was also telling Elizabeth, hey, don't let your sister do this.
Yeah. So we saw episode 9 and 10, which are the ends of the first season of The Crown.
Right.
You were saying that they've said they are renewing The Crown.
Yeah, they're going gonna do several more seasons.
That's great. I wonder if we're gonna see the same actress or they're gonna grow, because I mean she does eventually get older.
Well, I recently read that Claire Foy, who plays Elizabeth, is going to definitely be in season two.
Okay, great.
But she will not be in any seasons after that.
I understand that, because I mean Elizabeth does get older. Exactly. We see the Elizabeth today. If Elizabeth today is still Claire Foy, I'm gonna be like, okay, now we've
stretched.
That's
a whole lot of hair and makeup, sure. And 5 a.m. calls to do that.
Any predictions for season two?
I hope to see where the Philip Elizabeth relationship goes, and how it affects the country as a whole. I want to see more of Margaret's shenanigans. I would love to see how England changes and how it affects other countries. I'd love to see how their relationship with the United States a little bit more. And I'd just like to see Elizabeth kind of continuing to get comfortable in her role and how she continues to boss up and show people who she is.
Well, I'm hoping to see more of Elizabeth as the queen. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering how she deals with the world of the 60s and 70s in England, which was a big time for cultural change and revolution. I mean, we have the Beatles and we have Led Zeppelin. We just have a lot of growth.
Lots of drugs.
Yeah, a lot of cultural changes in England itself. A lot of she's dealing with a lot of world politic things that we've actually not seen. Even though the Egypt thing was brought up just a little, the Suez crisis was a major point and possibly led to what we think of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict of today. Mm-hmm. What started from that, the nationalization of the Suez Canal by Egypt, and the failed attempt by England to take it over. So it's just an interesting dynamic. I wonder if they're going to go more political or more interpersonal.
You know, I don't see them going more political, because we can, again, get that when doing a Google search. But what we are watching the show for is to see behind the closed doors of Buckingham Palace. I want to see what's going on in their bedrooms, what's going on, you know, downstairs, upstairs, you know. So that's why I watch the show, because it's very smart, but it's also sexy. Except that horse sex scene. That was a bit much.
A little piece of bestiality, but people are watching the show, and we're glad that you're watching our show right here on AfterBuzz. We will be back for season two. Thank you so much for watching. Please feel free to write in the comments below. Yes. Let us know what you're thinking. Let us know how you're feeling. We do miss Angela. Thank you so much, Angela, for being a part of our season. We will see you, Angela, season two, and all of you at home as well. Thank you so much. Right here on AfterBuzz, I am Tehran, literally at I am Tehran, all across the social media sphere, on the gram, the tweet, and the Snapchat. Please find me. Tell your friends to tell their friends to tell their hot girlfriends. The Bachelor of Heartthrob is here.
And then you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and occasionally Snapchat at Say Hi Sahai. That's S-A-Y-H-I. T-S-A-H-A-I. And thank you so much for watching. We'll see you in season two.
And I didn't forget to mention your tiara.
It's a crown. It's the crown. Final episode. It's
season one.
Finale.
Thank you so much for watching. See you next season.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later. Only because Angela's not here.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.